live from our living room, it's From Long Distance to Marriage with Andrea and Rich. We're a once long-distance couple who closed 5,000 miles of distance and made it through to marriage.
We talk long-distance, marriage, and relationships.
Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of From Long Distance to Marriage. First things first, apologies for my gravelly, perhaps coffee and stuffy nose voice. I'm getting over a cold, so bear with me. So today we wanted to talk about something that's really important to both of us, and that's mental health, specifically in a relationship. If you've been listening to the podcast recently, you know that I've mentioned in particular I've been struggling a little bit, but we wanted to talk a little bit more about what that looks like for both of us and also relationships in general. So to start off, I guess we wanted to just cover how mental health's really come a long way, hasn't it? Or at least like the awareness of it.
Yeah.
I think in recent years, people have been less afraid to talk about it and less kind of ashamed. Not that anyone should be ashamed, but there has always been that sort of stigma that goes along with that. But there's been a lot more awareness around it. And I think society in general, at least in Western civilization, I would say, I can't speak for anywhere else. There's been a real emphasis on taking care of your mental health and how that affects the rest of your life. But I guess kind of what we wanted to talk about specifically, we're not mental health professionals or anything, but we've both struggled with different aspects of mental well-being, mental health in both of our lives. And we wanted to kind of talk about how that affects relationships. And a big aspect, or I guess a type of relationship that can really affect, is long distance relationships. So babe, I don't know. I mean, when we were long distance, do you feel that you had any kind of real anxieties or, anything affecting your mental health about that scenario?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Nice for you. But you can see obviously how some people would, right? Like,
yeah, my anxiety has just always been different to yours.
Yeah.
I tend to worry about specific things like get on the plane and hope it didn't crash.
You're making
me have blood tests and stuff. I don't really have sort of...
You have
I wouldn't say I've got an underlying general anxiety, but I can see why, especially long distance, and we're going to touch on this, I guess, in the next episode on infidelity, about how if you are someone who has insecurities or paranoia to an extent, or just general anxiety. The thing with long distance is you can't put yourself in the place you need to be physically. You can't be with that person at that moment. I can see how it can exacerbate it.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess maybe if we start by just kind of talking a little bit about our own experiences with mental health, that might just be a good place to start. So yeah, you said you don't really suffer with a general anxiety or anything really specific, but you are, yeah, like your fears are very specific things, like almost more like phobias.
Yeah.
Like flying, heights, like a fear of like being sick, is it a gag reflex thing or just the actual being sick or all of it?
Yeah, no, it's just being sick.
Yeah.
It's, a metaphobia?
Oh, something? Is that the actual name?
Yeah, throwing up.
Okay. And then, yeah, flying, heights, soaring up.
Spiders.
Yeah, spiders. That's kind of where we're different, because those kind of things don't... Well, I'm not a big fan of spiders, but I've had to get a lot better with them because this guy just can't deal. I was always quite afraid of them, and my dad and my mom would have to take care of them when I was young and living at home, but now I'm the spider killer.
So I've made you a better person.
Yeah, whatever. But for me, I have had generalized anxiety disorder pretty much all my life. My mom says she even remembers me being like 8-10 months old, like a big baby, and seeing signs of like obsessive worry and stuff like that. I'm not OCD, but I do have...
At 10 months? Like what?
Yeah, she said it'd be the weekend and she would leave me with my dad just to go like to the grocery shopping or something, and she would just see like panic like starting up in me. And that's like, I had separation anxiety from my mom when I was a small child, and she saw it starting up even as small as then, or as early as then when I was that small. But I remember being like 3, 4 and having panic. So yeah, it was a long kind of road being really little. In my childhood, most mornings before school included panic attacks and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm much more of a general worrier. I don't really have problems with doing anything. Like, I can go on bridges, I can go up skyscrapers and look out windows. I have no issues about flying, other than the fact that it's a bit boring. But, like, general everyday stuff.
I would just like to point out, I can go on bridges. The bridge you're talking about in particular is the Hoover Dam, isn't it? A lot of people think I can't drive over a bridge.
You can't walk over bridges.
What bridges?
Well, like the one in London, the one over the river a bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, the only reason that wasn't a height thing, that's because it's really narrow and there's all the holes in the floor of it. So you can just see the water moving all around me. That just threw me off.
I wasn't attacking you. I was just talking about like heights or something.
I know. I just want people to understand I can drive.
Well, they don't know the story, so they didn't know. They didn't think I was victimizing you.
Yeah, that's fine. It's walking over certain things like that. That's well, not also,
you can see the water moving beneath you on that one or something in the river, so that made you feel a bit weird.
That's literally what I just said.
Oh. I was thinking about Hoover Dam while you were talking.
Hoover Dam's just fucking massive. And you wanted me to walk
it wasn't. Over. You can't actually go over Hoover Dam anymore, I don't think. So they've built, like, this bridge, like,
that's higher than Hoover Dam.
It's right next to the motorway. Like, there's a big freeway bridge that goes. It's really confusing. But yeah, you have to walk out in the middle of it, and you couldn't
It's
quite.
Obscenely high, and I didn't want to walk on it. That's where my heights phobia comes in. General bridges I'm okay with. Yeah, the one in London, that was more of a... I just felt off balance.
When we've walked to your mom's house from our house, there's that one, that bridge that goes over the freeway, and you don't even like that.
Yeah, they never used to bother me. But yeah, I don't like that one.
You don't really like any of them. No. You're all right driving on bridges. Keen.
Yeah.
But you're just a bit... Yeah, you can't really deal with them. But yeah, so my fears are more about just everything. So something, you know, that's stressing me out at work, or if I'm worried something's going to happen to my car, it goes on and on. And they're kind of obsessive thoughts that I really struggle to get rid of. But I would say that in our relationship, it was hardest when we were apart in terms of anxiety. We talked off and on for like 5 or 6 years before we met. Must've been about 5 years, I guess. Before we met in person. And so like leading up to when we actually met, it was all very fun and playful. And even though we had really strong feelings for each other, I didn't really get any sense of fear or anxiety or anything. It was all just, you know, the excitement leading up to meeting each other. The only time prior to us actually meeting that I did experience quite a lot of anxiety around the situation was when you went off to uni.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've listened to episode 1, our story, you'll know that there was a period of time, like when Rich went to live in his apartment. It was like student housing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you didn't have internet, and that's how obviously we were talking back then. Like, there was no WhatsApp to call each other like that. So we literally were Skyping or MSN, like, talking like that. We didn't have emails on our phones or anything like that, instant message, nothing like that. So it was a really tricky time because I had literally no contact with him. So otherwise, when we were apart before we met, as long as we could keep in touch, it was fine, wasn't it, really?
Well, yeah.
And obviously it sucked to be apart, and we struggled with that in different ways. But in terms of actual anxiety, it wasn't much of an issue. It wasn't until we'd actually met that it got really, really hard for me. It was very strange because suddenly, you know, I'd lived 23 years at the time without seeing this person face to face. And then suddenly I'd met them, and suddenly I didn't know how to do life when we were apart again. And so I think that's kind of where we want to start in terms of actually talking about how it can affect relationships and how it affected ours. So I slipped pretty quickly into a really bad state of panic and depression after I'd been to meet you and then went back home. Do you want to just talk a little bit about like what that period was like for you in terms of not being able to be there, or what you wanted to do or anything like that?
Well, it's difficult for me to talk about it because I wasn't there, so I didn't even really see what you were going through.
Yeah, I know.
It was only what you were telling me. So, like, it was hard, but you were living it.
I know, but there, you must have had some emotions around that in terms of, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, you couldn't see what I was going through, but I told you everything, I think.
Yeah, but it was just fairly sort of standard emotions that you would get in that situation. Like, it was different if I was living with you and seeing it happen. It's difficult when someone's just telling you this is happening. Like, it's not the same.
So, what, like, you felt removed from it? Like, you didn't
I was removed from it.
So, did it not really affect you then?
It didn't affect me, but, like, it's just not the same. You were going through that. That was your mental health anxiety. It wasn't mine.
But it was connected to us.
Yeah, but it wasn't mine.
Yeah, I know that, but...
I don't really feel there's much for me to say on it.
Okay. I thought you'd have more to say about that.
No.
Okay, well, for me, I guess, it was just, for me, it was the fear of the unknown, because we had a lot of, kind of extenuating circumstances around, you know, your family was thinking maybe moving at some point to a different country, and it was just kind of... For me, it was, okay, well, I've been with him. Now, obviously, I was really sad and missed him and didn't want to be apart again. We didn't know initially when we'd see each other again. Like, when I left to go back home, we hadn't set anything up at that point. We did not long after. And, yeah, it was just the uncertainty of not knowing when I'd see you again, when we could be together permanently, and, you know, what that would look like. And I had so many questions around it, and we had zero answers, which I think was the problem. Like, even if I had known, like, okay, I won't see him again for a year, but it will be under this circumstances, we're going to live in this place, and that's how it's going to work. But everything was so up in the air, and I find that for my kind of type of anxiety, everything being up in the air isn't really something I can deal with. But we made it through. I nearly ended it because I was just so consumed with anxiety, and I thought, oh, well, it doesn't matter how much I love him, like, if I'm just out of this situation, I'll feel better. But you didn't let me, which is good. But yeah, I think let's kind of talk a little bit about what you were saying before for how it might affect other people. I think, like you said, there's a lot of fears about what the other person might be doing. You know, are they staying faithful? Or are they even as into it as you are? Do you know what I mean? When you're face to face, and or even in a local relationship, you can gauge if how the person feels about you and see the look on their face, and you have the physical affection as a reinforcement of that. But when you're apart, you genuinely have to just go by what they're saying.
Well, yeah.
So I think that is a natural thing that's going to make you feel worried or anxious or unsure. It's a hard thing to go through, and I think that if it starts to play on your anxieties, that's totally understandable. I think especially for women, but what about for men? I mean, I know you said it didn't really bother you, you didn't have any problems with it apart from, like, missing, but in terms of, like, men, do you think that there's concern that the same way as well, like, is she being faithful and things like that? Do you think that could affect men as easily?
Yeah.
Yeah, like what?
Well, I don't think there's gender difference in what your anxieties are.
No, not necessarily anxieties, but I think that women need a little bit more reassurance is kind of what I'm maybe saying in a really bad way.
Yeah, maybe. I think that's a very individual thing.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I think if you got anxiety, like, your anxiety wasn't limited to the relationship.
No.
You have anxiety.
No, yeah.
The relationship was just something else for you. I just think that's sort of representative. If someone has anxiety, they have anxiety. Like, and the distance, like you said, what did it for you was you need to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know what's going on. And not everyone's going to have the same concerns like
no.
that, but then you're gonna have some people who are worried that is the other person being faithful, do they mean what they say, is this, yeah, we see these kind of posts on Reddit and Instagram with people saying, you know, not sure if they want to meet, not sure if they're in the same place, not sure, and I think that, you know, that's a communication thing. I think the thing with anxiety though that's important to talk about with relationships is how it affects the other person. Like, we both have degrees of anxiety, so we can understand it, but a lot of people don't.
Yeah, so one person has it and the other person doesn't, you
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, like, I think it's... I think that's difficult. If you don't know what the other person's really going through, you can't relate to it.
Yeah.
I think some people can really lack empathy there because they can't relate to it and they think, I'll get over it. Then you get the people who do have the anxiety and it can sort of make it worse that their partner's not able to talk to them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I can talk you through anxiety a lot of the time. I can sort of calm you down. I don't think if you need some empathy to even want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important in relationships is if you have anxiety, it's important to be with someone who can try and relate. Like, not that they have to have anxiety, but they have to be willing to at least try and
they need patient and understanding and stuff like that and want to try and help. Yeah. I think if you're a person who doesn't have any experience with that or can't really relate to someone who does, you need to be aware going in, whether it's a long distance relationship or not long distance, that you might have a little bit more work cut out for you than someone in a relationship with someone who isn't anxious. You know, you're going to need to be a little bit more of a crutch and a bit more of a friend to kind of keep them kind of going through these tricky periods. But, you know, you were saying before about being with someone who doesn't understand. I mean, I know of someone who really, you know, struggles with anxiety and I think maybe a little bit of depression, and they were married and the other person just didn't really relate at all and kind of thought like, oh, it's in your head. Like, you don't need to go see a shrink. Like, you know, they thought that they were making up that they were feeling it, but just like the feelings were all made up. And they don't actually come from somewhere. And I know that was a real struggle. And in the end, the relationship didn't work. So it is something that, you know, yeah, it is very real. It is going on in this person's head, even though maybe it's blown out of proportion or whatever. But you do have a responsibility if you've chosen to be with someone to believe them and understand them and support them in whatever they need. So that's just something to kind of bear in mind. It's hard work, but the person is just every bit of deserving of love and understanding if they're anxious or have, you know, mental health problems beyond anxiety. But it's something that you should maybe look into a little bit and make sure you feel you can provide adequate support to that person before you kind of dive in. Do you think? Like, I think especially for real, I mean, anxiety and stuff like that can be really difficult, but there's a lot more serious mental health issues that can be very, very difficult to deal with, you know, like extreme OCD or schizophrenia. I mean, these are quite serious things. You need to make sure that you can be around that and be helpful and everything. Well, I can't speak, you know, too much about those things. It's not anything I've ever dealt with or known, but, you know, they can be very difficult.
Yeah, I think it's just important to talk. I think the thing that's come into prominence with the mental health conversations now, especially for men, is that we keep things to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that for the past so many years, a lot of the talk on genders has been about, from a feminism point of view, about female equality and this and that. But I think it has been overlooked that some of the messages that men get, and this is starting to get prominent. You know, men are always told the boys don't cry, man up, keep it to yourself, just get on with it. That's sort of ingrained in us from a young age.
Yeah.
You have to be strong. You don't want to be a burden to people. So I think whereas women have always been, I feel like women are generally more open with each other.
And we feel that we can be.
And you feel you can be. And it's okay if, you know, women are almost maybe not expected to cry.
Allowed. But we're allowed to
cry.
Yeah,
you're allowed. Yeah, exactly. You're allowed to cry. You're allowed to just kind of. Men, like, it's a different situation. And I think women don't get it. I think because it's a side of men around other men tend to act slightly differently
mm-hmm.
than when there's women around. So it's something women don't really see, the side of masculinity. That's not saying, you know, we talk, men do talk. You know, you have your friends that you talk to. But I think we're a bit more guarded.
Mm-hmm.
We're much more reluctant to break down in front of people. So I think that's something, the positive side of this conversation about mental health, the focus is getting now.
Yeah.
I think is that, I mean, that has to be linked, I guess, with the suicide rate is higher for men.
Yeah, young white men are the highest suicide kind of demographic, and a lot of them are the demographic that are doing things like mass shootings. And almost all of the mass shootings, like in America, obviously, I don't know the statistics, I don't have that in front of me, but the alarming rate of them are young white men who've been linked back to having mental health issues previously in their life.
Yeah, and I think, look, there's degrees of mental health issues.
Like, oh, yeah.
Someone who has some panic attacks, I think it's different, you know, PTSD. I mean, like, PTSD and adolescent depression both come under mental health, and, mm-hmm. and obviously they're not...
They're different degrees, They're
different
yeah.
degrees. And, but, yeah, I think that we're stubborn, men are stubborn.
Yeah.
And, so I think that is starting to change. I look at people, men now who are sort of in their early 20s, just, they're growing up in a different era than when I was in my 20s, and they're now, I suppose, more likely to talk.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot more encouragement. We see a lot more messaging. I can't remember. I was in the town where I work, and I went out at lunchtime, and like the bus stops, you know, had like posters about, you know, encouraging men to talk. Like, must be a government fund or charities. I don't know what it was, but you know how men need to talk. And just today I was on Instagram watching stories, and Kristen Bell, the actress, she's quite active around a lot of different, you know, causes. And she said, oh, I've seen this t-shirt. I'm definitely buying it. And it said, girls masturbate too, boys cry too. And it was kind of, you know,
yeah,
kind of all these different things of what we expect of people. But
I think men, like, we're taught a degree of shame. Like, if you, and you see it like a lot, women see it a lot in, like, films, like Hollywood films, this real sort of, so women sit in films, what I mean is, where I said before, that women don't really see a lot of conversations with men and this and that, that's a bit of a window. Like, there's this real shame of being gay still. Like, or being perceived as gay, or...
Among men, you mean?
Yeah, among men. Yeah, yeah. So, the irony of it is if you are gay, obviously there are communities where people aren't accepting, but generally speaking, if you've got a gay friend, they're accepted. Like, it's no issue. But there are still the jokes about a straight person being gay, or perceived as gay. Like, do you know what I mean? So there's a lot of shame still for men. I don't think women really have that issue.
No. I think men also feel a certain sense of responsibility to be, you know, in a family setting or in a relationship setting, to be, you know, the breadwinner and the kind of the solid rock, you know, kind of thing. I think, I know for you, you haven't really had any anxieties, but, you know, you've had some stresses at work and stuff, normal stuff, but stuff that maybe you would benefit from talking from, but because, you know, I've been in a really tough place, you just haven't felt that you wanted to put that on me or open that up. And I think that happens a lot. Men have, if they find a reason that maybe isn't really a reason to not talk about it. Oh, it's just normal. Of course it's stressful, but if it's affecting you in one way, whether that's, you know, people get affected by stress in different ways, whether that's not sleeping or physical side effects, you know, feeling sick, run down, whatever. You know, stress is a normal thing. I wouldn't say stress is a mental health issue, but it can quickly become something more, especially the way things are today.
Yeah, I do think, I don't think everyone has to talk. I don't think everyone feels the need to, but I think there's a difference in not really feeling the need to talk and deliberately holding something in. And I don't think you should hold things in.
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, there might be the desire to talk, but the fear to do it.
Well, there's also, not you may not always feel like you've got someone to talk to.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's something.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember what it was. There's a few people this week that I just realized, like, how hard it is for some men to talk. I was talking to a family member on the phone this week about a male family member. And then I knew that you were kind of stressed out, and you kind of talked to me about a little bit of it. And then I had a friend who I could tell really wanted to talk about something, and he was struggling. And so this week I said, let's just go get a drink, you know, let's grab a coffee and talk. And he wanted to talk to me. I could see it, but I could see physically it not hurt, but it was just a struggle.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to say the word sometimes, and then you also wonder, you know, is it going to come back? Is it going to come up again?
Yeah,
is it something you're going to bring up the next day at work? Like it's.
And I think it's hard to have the right person to talk to because, for instance, the person. So my friend, the people that he wanted to talk to, were people close to the situation that was making him really stressed and anxious. So he felt he couldn't talk to them. Whereas I'm completely removed. I've never met any of the people. So I think he felt like he could get talking and realize that maybe it is safe to talk to those people. You know, you just need to get the conversation going. It doesn't have to be a big, like, intervention style or tear-ridden conversation. You just need to maybe open the dialogue up about it. I think we're getting off topic a little bit, just getting on men in general. But I think maybe we, as couples, whether you're long distance or close, you know, what kind of things can you do to help each other? And just for us as an example, I think constant reassurance has been when we were apart, that's what it was. I think I lied. I said that there was no anxiety going up to before we met, but after our first attempt to meet didn't work out. And then we started talking again a few years later, running up to me arranging a ticket and meeting, there was anxiety around that. I was scared, you know, would you do this again? Like it wasn't all consuming, but it was a thought I had. You know, in the back of my mind, you know, is this not going to work out again? Am I going to get hurt again? And what you did was constantly reassure me. Never did I mention that. And you made me feel bad about it. Like, stop bringing this up. You didn't feel like I was guilting you because you knew I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You knew that's fair. That's a fair concern. She was hurt. She still cares. She wants to meet. And you felt, not like you had to prove yourself, but you felt willing to provide that reassurance. Maybe you did feel like you had to prove yourself a little. I don't know. But you took responsibility for how something that happened previously had affected me and in my anxieties, and you were happy to provide whatever you needed, and you did. And then when we were apart, really, you just were there as much as you could be, and you listened, and you were patient, and you were calm. And yeah, you never made me feel bad or annoying for needing that, which I think is a very big part of it. And I think all people need that. Everyone needs that because I feel this a lot, that when I'm in a state where I need constant reassurance or I'm going through something and I just need to talk through something over and over, I feel like a burden. And I've said that to you on several occasions. I'm so sorry. I feel like I'm a burden to you.
Yeah.
And you thwart that. God, no, don't. That's silly. Not that I'm silly, but you know, that's not true at all. You are not a burden. And in our vows, we promised, you know, better for worse. And this is a worse time for me. And you're there. And I don't think I could be with someone that wasn't like that. Come, you know, being the way I am and growing up with what I did and the feelings that are attached to it. But I think mental health in a relationship is really important. And I think particularly in long distance relationships, you have to put so much effort in that I think you can forget about yourself a little bit. Did you ever feel that way? Like you were putting so much into our relationship that you maybe weren't spending as much time with your friend? I know you weren't living near your friends, but did you feel like you were missing out on anything because you were putting so much in?
No, but I think a lot of people do, men and women. But I think actually I saw something interesting on Instagram yesterday that I think is true, that this isn't strictly to do with relationships, but I think it touching a point that it's important to still make time for yourself. I don't think we do this, actually. I really don't. But it's just important to have some solitude. But, like, no phone, no internet, just go somewhere. Not, you know, don't go away for the weekend on your own. But like, you know, just have a couple of hours where you go somewhere. Go to the woods or, I suppose, where you used to live, you could have gone into the mountains or something. Just, you know, sort of somewhere back to nature a little bit, no fun, and just be in your own head. And I think a lot of times in relationships, people don't do that.
Mm.
I really think actually that's something we could probably start to look into as a New Year's resolution is, and maybe we can reflect on it in the podcast and see how it's worked out for us.
Yeah, guys,
bad or otherwise.
A few weeks back, you know, I had seen that Neolithic rock thing that I wanted to see. And I did. I took an hour or so and I drove out and parked up and did, it was a short walk and looked around and enjoyed it, you know, and kind of had some time to think. And yeah, I think we have time on our own.
But the thing
is, but with other people or
with really other people, the problem with society now is we're never not distracted.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've always got your phone. Or, you know, we've got Apple Watches. So if we haven't got our phone, we've got our watch. You can always be looking at some sort of screen or some noise or some distraction. And actually, it just takes us out of our own head. So you're not sitting there thinking, who am I? What do I want to do? What do I want to achieve? Like, I just think it's a pretty good grounding experience. Just once in a while, just go for a couple of hours.
It doesn't have to be big questions, just...
Well, you haven't even got to ask the questions. I think if you're just on your own and you let your mind do its own thing, you'll start to think different things than if you were on Facebook, on Instagram, watching TV. Take a notebook if you want to, like, draw something, sketch. I mean, this kind of, like, you know, I spoke to you before about the morning pages, and I kind of feel like it's a similar thing. So,
for people who aren't
familiar with it, so morning pages is we started talking about it for you for your anxiety, actually. But it's essentially you wake up in the morning before you do anything else, you just write down two pages. It's sort of stream of consciousness. Was it three pages? Stream of consciousness style. So you're not trying to write a story, you're not thinking about anything in particular, just writing down words. And some days it might be complete gibberish. But then you sort of look back on it after a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and you might start to see some themes. I don't know if you got that far into it, did you?
But I mean, at one period I did do quite for a few good few weeks. I mean, I've always dipped in and out of it. But I think what made me feel is like I could never just do stream of consciousness because my brain is always...
But I don't know if you really gave it the... Because you always... You said, I wanted to get up and have my cup of coffee and get the day flowing. And the purpose of it is you do it right in the morning because your brain's still sort of firing from sleep and dreaming.
So don't get me wrong.
You're not
like,
in the day.
I would jump around from different topics, but it was more like a brain dump than a stream of consciousness.
Which is all it's supposed to be. Yeah. It's just you just write words.
So but, whatever's in my head.
And I think that's all it is. And I think you could, that's one thing you can do. Because when I was researching that, I was finding interesting things from people saying, oh, I didn't know this, but after... A year after doing it, I changed my job and I did this and that because they uncovered some of the things that they weren't realizing were the root of their stress or their anxieties. But yes, you know, go for a walk, sit down, draw, just write stuff down. I think in being in a relationship, I mean, you said it in one of our during our porn episode that you're a couple, but you're still two individuals.
Mm.
And I think that ties in perfectly with that. Yeah, your relationship and you want to spend the bulk of your time together, but you're still you.
Mm-hmm.
And also, by doing things to become a better you, you'll be a better partner.
Yeah.
So if you take in 3 hours out to go sit in the woods and just think about stuff, makes you more relaxed, more in tune, answer some questions that you didn't previously know the answers to, that'll make you a better partner. Then you owe it to both of you.
Mm. Do you think it has to be in nature? Like, could you go get a massage, a spa day? Like, you know, could you
go for a run. I think the idea of it is you're completely not distracted. If you're going for a massage, there's someone there.
You don't mind talking massages, but yeah.
But you've got to go there. You've got to talk to the receptionist. You're in the process of doing something. You're paying for that. It doesn't have to be in nature. I think the main gist of it is you're going somewhere on your own where you're not distracted.
So that could be going to your church to pray, that, you know, whatever. Yeah,
maybe, but there's no music in the background. There's no people that you're talking to. It could be a long walk. It could be going for a run. I suppose, you know, I wouldn't do it at your own house because there's familiar surroundings, but I suppose if you had to, you could go and, you know, like a hotel room for the day. Just somewhere different where you can be on your own in your own space without your phone, without your laptop, without TV. I think that's really the bulk of it. I think going for a massage and all that kind of stuff is good to treat yourself.
Self-care anyway.
I think as part of a bigger picture of self-care, and you've done that, you treat yourself to a massage on your birthday, and I think all that's still important, but more what I'm specifically talking about is just being on your own. With your thoughts.
And that I find stuff like that hard because, like, for us, we both work a long day. Sometimes you're out one or two evenings a week. You have commitments on the weekends. I feel like for maybe for some people who are in similar situations, like I wouldn't really necessarily want three hours more away from you. I know I'm still my own person, but I like myself better in this relationship. So you have to find a way, whatever that means, to make that work. If say it maybe, you know, if someone hears that, like, oh, it just reminds me of like the second Sex and the City movie where Carrie and Big are like arguing. And
well, he has his weekend. Yeah, I know what you mean. I think that's a big difference. There's a big difference between...
Hold on, let me just finish that thought, okay, in case people don't understand.
Okay.
She, like, was a little bit annoyed with him, and she had this article to write. So she went back to her old apartment, which she kept just, like, as a second place. And she got her story down, and then he picked her up, and he was really romantic, and he'd missed her. And then he said, hey, I think that's great. I think we should each have, like, a night or two of our own at your old apartment. Or maybe I'll get my own place in the city. So you have your apartment, I have mine, and we have our apartment together. Obviously, that's not what we're saying, but it just reminds me of that.
What he was doing, or what she thought he was doing, was saying, I want time away from you every week. What I'm saying is more, every now and then, just be with you, for you, not to escape your partner. And I think,
But I'm saying some people might interpret that way. If you say to your partner, oh, you know, I want some time to myself every now and then, that, for me, I know that, like, maybe not the way you would say it, but I know that depending on the relationship, I might be like, whoa, this seems like a bad sign to me.
I think it ties into the sort of anxiety, mental health in two ways. One, you've got the way that we've been talking about of it's important for you to do it.
Uh-huh.
To help. But then, could it be mindful of the potential for it to play up your partner's anxieties to frame it in the right way?
Yeah.
Like I said, I mean, this is the first time we've mentioned it.
Yeah, so I'm trying to work my mind through it.
I only saw it Instagram yesterday, but I think it would be something good for us both to do, sort of from January, but it wouldn't be you going to a hotel every Saturday and I go to a hotel every other Saturday. I just think every now and then when we feel needed or you say, actually, I'm going to do this once every 2-3 months, I'm going to just... We've got like those woods, you know, the Vigo woods. That sort of ideal, there's benches there, you can walk there. It's just quite a nice, relaxing place. You can just say, well, I'm going to go there on my own for a walk, I'll be back in an hour and a half, like... I don't see why that should impact any anxieties, because the purpose of it isn't storming out of the house in an argument, I'm getting away from you. I'm going to be on my own for a little bit, especially for us, because we do have a lot of distractions. Like, the dogs are always taking up our time and attention, stressing us out. We've both got jobs, like, and we never do anything on our own, individually.
We do?
Individually.
We do.
What do we do?
Oh, you mean like without other friends or something as well? Okay.
I mean, on our own.
I do quite
a lot. And I know a lot of people don't like... You do errands on your own. It's not the same thing. And I think a lot of people, like my mum has always said, she doesn't like her own company. So I think a lot of people wouldn't like to do that because they'd be uncomfortable. Or they'd be uncomfortable with themselves. But I think that's important.
Maybe.
I think
trying to process it. You sprung this on me. This was not planned content.
But I think if you... that you said about being a burden and all this. Now, if you're constantly looking to someone else for support, not that you shouldn't, but I mean, if you're constantly doing that, like, if this is a way of helping someone be a little bit more in tune with themselves, actually, I know I need this, I know that.
I know what you're saying, but, like, that may not work for everyone. Like, for me...
I'm not saying it worked for everyone.
Yeah, like, for me, I'm very in tune with myself. I've had to be because I've been through a lot of therapy in my life for anxiety and depression and stuff. If I feel like a burden, going out and sitting on my own just doesn't make me feel worse. Mindset. But it's because if I'm in a spot where I feel like I'm a burden, I'm not in a good headspace, and going out and sitting on my own for 2 hours is not going to be conducive. But then maybe
you don't do it when you are feeling like a burden.
Yeah.
Like I said, this isn't sensitive, but like running away.
Yeah.
This is just, the point of it is, look, like you said before, like in the porn episode when we were talking about masturbation and stuff like that, that up until the point you enter that relationship, you've always had a relationship with yourself to some degree. And I think when you enter a relationship, it's easy to neglect that.
Mm.
And you can kind of sort of get stuck in time. And then you're just swept away with everything else. So suddenly, you get responsibilities in a relationship. Suddenly, I'm earning money and I've got to pay for the mortgage or the rent and we've got car payments and you've got the other person to think about. And life's just very, very different when you're in a grown-up relationship to when you're younger, to when you live on your own. And basically what the crux of what I'm saying is, it's just good every now and then to sort of check back in with yourself.
Yeah, I can agree with that totally.
But I don't think it's checking in with yourself to watch TV. That's important too. You know, you go to bed, you watch Gilmore Girls, and it's important to do your own things as well. But I think in addition to that, every now and then, just check in actually with yourself.
Yeah, without any distractions and stuff. Yeah. And that's kind of what I was doing. Now, this was a few weeks ago, and I went on that walk, and I had read about this place. It's basically like a kind of like a stone circle, but it's a lot older than Stonehenge, a lot more beat up as well and fallen down.
Not nearly as famous, though.
No. I've lived a few miles from it for 7-8 years now, and I had no idea it was there. But I went, and I walked, and I checked it out, and, you know, I didn't uncover anything amazing. It was maybe only an hour of my day, but it was nice. I got some fresh air. I think that's a huge part of it, is getting some fresh air.
That's really similar to what we're talking about. Yeah. And I think maybe we should do a follow-up episode on this, like having your own hobbies. Because, you haven't done it for a long time, but you used to take pictures.
I still take pictures. I took a lot of pictures on
that. But you had a proper camera.
Yeah, I didn't use it. But I write.
Yeah, and I think it's... generally it's important to maintain... Because your partner fell in love with a certain person, and if you start neglecting that person, are they still going to be there? For the other person to still identify with?
Yeah, it's a lot of balance. And I think balance comes into relationships, and it comes into mental health. Like, what you said a little bit earlier is, you know, you have to make sure that you're in a good place yourself, because then you're a better partner. And obviously there's going to be times where you're not able to do that. If mental health is an issue or a struggle, if you are not in a good place, you're not going to be the best partner, and your partner needs to be okay with that and help you feel better and get back to who you are so that you can be. Not just that you can be. Obviously the ultimate goal is that you're happy and healthy in yourself so that you can be better in general in life and in your service to your partner. Yeah, it's just something that's been on my mind a lot lately, because what I've been going through, you know, you've been an excellent example of a balance between spoiling me a little bit. Like, when I first was getting this way, I think you thought I was just in a little bit of a rut, feeling a little bit homesick. So there was like, oh, I'm going to draw you a bath. I got you some Lush bubble bath. I'm going to make you dinner. And that was really nice. And then I think you saw that wasn't helping. This was more than that. So it was more just being calm, steady presence, being here for me, reassuring me, you know, of what it was going to be.
And we'd been together long enough that we know each other very well.
Yeah.
And I saw it's something like, it's harder for people who are new.
Yeah.
But
sometimes these things don't come out, because not that people are hiding it, but if you're in a new relationship, that euphoria that comes with that,
that's true,
makes you feel really happy for a long time. I know people who've been through that. Like, they'll say, you know, I'm a worrier, or I have this or I have that, but the partner won't actually see it until the honeymoon period ends. And that can last a couple years before.
It can, yeah.
Before you lose that.
But it's still, after a couple of years, seeing the anxiety will be new.
Yeah.
You know, we know each other very well, but I also know your anxiety very well.
But do you remember the first time you really saw it face to face?
No, but I remember I could see it on webcam, because you do that thing with your fingers.
I think the first time you probably would have seen it is when, like, really face to face, is when we were living together in America and we were going through the visa process or worried about being apart.
Yeah,
again.
Maybe. But yeah, I think, you know, it doesn't matter how long into the relationship you are necessarily. At some point, you're going to see the anxiety for the first time, and that will be new.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a learning curve on how you best deal with it.
Yeah. And I think you've had to learn.
Yeah. But, I mean, I've been exposed to anxiety before.
Yeah.
Which helped. I think if you're someone who hasn't, that is harder. But then, so the person who needs support has also got to identify the fact that the person they want support from doesn't know what to do. And they're not necessarily just being a dick. They just don't know what to do.
Yeah, I think the tricky thing here, this is something else I want to talk about, is, you know, I think we're very supportive and patient with each other. You in particular are really good with me. But that's probably because you've had more practice with me, because my anxieties are more regular and occur more than yours, I think. And you said like earlier that your anxieties or your things are around specific phobias or events or things you have to do. But you have experienced periods in your life where it was just really bad, like sometimes going out of the house.
Panic attacks.
And, yeah, where you didn't exactly know, like, you weren't being made to fly, you weren't being made to, you know, go up heights or something, but you were still having them for some reason.
No,
so
I had
think,
it, yeah, where we were having, there was a lot of stress going on when I was living at home. There was a period of time which was really stressful. And I was just that age, I was like 16, so it's just that age which is quite difficult, you're going through it anyway. And yeah, I was getting panicked. So yeah, I do know...
So
anxiety.
You can relate, I feel, better to me because you've at least experienced a bit of what I go through, whereas I have a lot harder time relating to what you're going through, and I wish I was better at it.
Well, this is what's annoyed me in the past, is like with flying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you know, like I used to check the weather to see how bad turbulence had been reported as being. And you would just like get over it.
Not to start with. I don't, come on, be fair. Like,
you said it though.
I have said it, yeah, and I don't necessarily feel proud of that. I don't feel proud of it at all, but I would try and be really patient, and I think I would get frustrated.
You would, but you would very quickly, and I think that's because, like you just said, you can't really identify with specific things like that. Like, you weren't worried about anything happening up there, so you're like, what are you worried about? It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Get on the plane.
Yeah, and I would start out like, oh no, it'll be fine. Like, think about how many times we've flown before, and everything has been fine, and, you know, we're not flying through an area that's, like, known for bad... This, you know, and I really try to logic it through you.
You do, but then if I've got answers to those things, like,
yeah, but your answers,
like, say turbulence can just happen anywhere, as an example, like, well, you know, you can get turbulence anywhere. If I have answers to that, that's when you start to quickly be like, look, just get on the plane.
Well, it's because I start to panic, not panic, but feel like I can't answer that. Like, I'm not a pilot. I don't know the answers to that. Like, all I can go on is what's happened before.
But so we need different types of reassurance, basically.
Yeah, and I'm still trying to figure out how to provide that to you.
And I suppose you don't really see mine as often.
Yeah,
like,
we fly once a year at most.
Well, until last year, I hadn't flown in three years. So you didn't see it for 3 years.
And you were fine, actually.
Yeah, I was better. But like, so it's not like you haven't got sort of repeated practice a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel... We've been pretty lucky with spiders in this house. We've only... Okay, recently we've had two, but for the 3 years before that we lived here, we didn't really have any. So you weren't dealing with that either. And
but I don't... I'm also not... Like, in the beginning, when I was almost as scared of them as you were, like, we would fight about it.
Oh, we would.
And I would get really angry because I felt like, you're the man, protect me, and blah, blah, blah. And when it comes to spiders, he is not a man. And that's okay.
But I held a tarantula.
Yeah, that's weird. I couldn't do that. But that's something that I guess... we've identified, like, you know, I've looked at, okay, I'm not as scared of this as he is, and he actually has a phobia, a genuine phobia of spiders. It's not just they creep him out or he thinks they're gross, he doesn't like them. He's genuinely afraid of them. I'm also genuinely afraid of them, but less so. So while I can't put them under a glass and take them outside and set them free...
But then I do the other things, like when the cat brings a bird in.
Yeah, or mice.
You're
you do
gone.
It. Yeah, no, I don't. I don't know. I think, I don't know why.
And that's fine. Like, I've got no problem with... And it irritates me, my spider phobia, because I'm fine with pretty much every other animal.
Yeah, you are pretty good. Except
like,
for bees and wasps.
I don't like... Bees I'm fine with, if I know it's a bee. Wasps I don't like.
Yeah, you don't like... Well, any small flying thing, like flies will freak you out, because you're not sure if they're...
I'm fine with flies. I don't like them buzzing past my head. I don't
when you
know
don't
what
know what
is,
they are, yeah.
Then I think it's a wasp. Flies, yeah. Generally, I'm fine. But, yeah, any animal's fine. So birds and mice and whatever. But... So yeah, you do the spider.
Yeah, I had to cowboy up a little bit and get comfortable with doing that. And I don't do anything to make you feel bad about that. I think at first I was trying to get out of having to do it, so I wasn't above at that point trying to make you feel emasculated. But you didn't care. You're like, I don't care. You can try to emasculate me. This is it. I can't do it.
Yeah, when it comes to spiders, I do not give a fuck.
Little ones, like, you'll do tiny ones.
Yeah, but I mean, if I'm freaked out by a spider, it doesn't matter if you tell me, like, I need to man up and this and that, like, it's not happening.
Yeah.
I've got no shame.
And I don't do that anymore, because I realise it's something that, you know, I do think that if your partner is afraid of something, you should encourage them to face it. I do think that you should...
Well, the other thing about spiders, though, that makes it difficult is they always fucking catch you off guard. Like, you don't walk into them, right, there's a spider in there, I'm going to take care of it, I'm going to do this and that. We'll be sitting on the couch and the fucking thing comes running towards your face.
Oh, God, that was awful.
And my Fear is whenever you've gone back to America on your own. You've done it twice.
I've done it once without you.
You've been twice.
Once.
Oh, no, you went to Ireland with your buddy. Oh, yeah. Whenever you're not here, my fear is like, what am I going to do if I find a massive spider in the
house? I like that you're not worried. What if something happens to her?
I don't think anything's going to happen to you. And you're not like on your own. You're not backpacking. You're with family. I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to have to go and call on the neighbours and see them come in and take care of this thing. And like, yeah.
You have to call your stepdad.
No, I don't know. I don't know. Just get the blowtorch.
And some hairspray.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think we've kind of gone off the topic that we planned to.
Think it's a bit, like I said, mental health is very broad.
It is very broad, yeah.
And if you're talking about general anxiety and, you know, things like PTSD briefly, and I really think for me it all comes down to try and be empathetic and respectful. So, you know, be aware that men in particular maybe, you said the other day, like, men need to talk more. There's things in men should be talking about, but we choose not to. Be respectful and mindful of that. And if your partner suffers from anxiety, be respectful and mindful of that. And that's really it for me, I think. Like, the crux of the issue.
Being mindful and respectful.
Be mindful and respectful, yeah. You don't know what other... There's a great quote I found last year that said, if I was in that person's shoes, I'd be doing the same thing. And I know that you wouldn't 100% do what that person's doing, but I just interpret it as being that person's had experiences that I've not had, and those experiences have influenced the decisions they're now taking. My experiences are different, so the actions I would take are different. And it's just about that sort of, just think there's a reason that people don't set out to ruin your day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. So just think if someone is, you just never know what someone's going through.
Yeah.
Basically, it's when someone's, you know, driving recklessly, when someone's being a kind of aggressive in the shop, you know, whatever it might be. Just think, I don't know what they're going through. You know, they may have just lost someone really close to them, or this, that, and the other. So I try and sort of get out of my own head a bit and be objective.
Benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that from a mental health point of view, I think that I kind of feel like that's important. Not, you know, with strangers, fine, you're probably never going to see them again, but apply that same thing to the people in your actual life, the people in the office who are being unreasonable, or, you know, if you're being anxious about something or whatever.
I mean, that's something that someone said to me this week, like, you know, I've been really struggling at work to not fully have a panic attack. I've been very quiet for several weeks, just going in, getting my work done and coming home kind of thing. And I was able to kind of open up to a friend at work a little bit about what's been going on. A couple of my friends have known that I'm quite close to at work, but someone that I really like and get along with well, but just hadn't really told them what was going on. I've been in a situation where I haven't been able to really say what's going on with me without feeling very emotional about it. So I didn't want to risk doing that. And I told them, and they said, yeah, you know, I could tell something was going on with you, but I didn't want to ask or, you know, upset you or anything, but, you know, it's always good to talk. And so I am talking, I just, not to everyone kind of thing. And I think it's really alarming. And this is something I want to say to people, if you're going through something and maybe your partner doesn't know, you know, you need to feel like you can talk to your partner, and you'll probably be surprised for the better with how they respond. Especially if you've been together for a really long time and you don't know what's happening. Maybe you're experiencing some mental health issues for the first time and you don't know what to do about it. You don't know what it is. You know, your partner, you chose them for a reason. And one of that is to help get you through things. And talk, be mindful, but mostly be aware of of what's going on inside of you so that you can figure out a way to take care of it so that your partner can help you and you can get back to being who you are and have your healthy, loving relationship.
Yeah.
Again, we're not healthcare experts, we're not healthcare experts. We're definitely not mental healthcare experts either. We're always happy to share or give any advice into maybe where you should go to talk to someone. Feel free to get in touch with us and ask any questions or share any stories or experiences that you'd like to pass on to us. Right. Thank you guys for listening. Bye.